episode 708 of Long Box Heroes, the Lamborghini of comic book podcasts. I'm Todd, along with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good, Todd.
I'm glad. I'm doing great. I'm full of, you know what? Sometimes people tell me I'm full of baloney, but I think I'm ready to do this show.
I had a turkey sandwich for dinner and a milkshake. That was my dinner tonight.
Oh, the tryptophan is kicking in.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been eating I'm 3 days in a row of eating burgers for either dinner or lunch. We talked no food on After Dark, so food talk is going to be here.
Right.
And I know it was off mic, but Todd spoke sacrilege, and I have to shame him publicly for this.
Okay.
And he had said that Thin Mints aren't good.
Thin Mints? Okay. Not just Thin Mints, but any mint, mm-hmm. anything, that means the peppermint patties, whatever. If I wanted to eat toothpaste, I'd eat toothpaste.
But it's a delightfully chocolate, crispy toothpaste.
No.
So,
no.
Thin Mints are my favorite, right? I love Thin Mints. And about a week or two ago at the store, I forget who makes them, whatever the person who makes them, whatever, but they're officially licensed by the Girl Scouts of America. Mm. They're little, instead of a cookie, it's a little ball almost.
Right. So,
and it's a chocolate, crispy, minty Girl Scout cookie. Oh, they were so good.
No, mint is only to make your breath fresh after you've eaten a stinky meal, and that is it.
So after I have a big plate, when I go to last week, you know, I'm tempting fate. I went to Long John Silver's, you know, mostly as a wellness check to make sure that the one by me is still open.
Right, giving it to business. You know?
So I went there. And after I eat the delicious chicken planks and big things of fish, I should eat some Thin Mints to kind of freshen my breath, is what you're saying, right?
Yes, that's what you should do. That's what you should do.
All right. Duly noted. Duly noted. I'm putting on the list. So what do we got to talk about on the show this week, Todd?
It's a slender reed of a show, Joe. In news, did you know DC is the only one who could mess up printings?
Todd.
We'll get to that. And, you know, moving some movie dates around. But I'm not too worried about that one. Conventions. The latest edition of My Walk Down Lois Lane with our good friend Becky, which is a follow-up with Larry Luthor and his Hair Club for Men.
I thought you were going to say our good friend Larry Luthor.
No, come on.
All right.
Though I may like him better. But anyway, what we read last week, which is one book, Pine and Merrimack number 4. What we're looking forward to this week, Todd and Joe have issues where we reread Gail Simone's Secret Six in its entirety. And this week we're on to Secret Six Volume 3, the ongoing issue 1. And I think that's everything, because in a week or two we'll be getting back to TV talk with Joe's favorite show, Doctor Who.
My wife's favorite show. She asks me all the time, when is the new season start up?
When is he has access to a time machine, and everybody's saying, when is he going to be on?
Mm-hmm. When will then be now?
Exactly. Soon.
Well, as Todd mentioned here at the beginning of the show, I can't believe Marvel decided to rip DC off.
Ladling their heat. Warmth, sorry.
And of all the things for them to rip off, it's a printing error.
Right.
And again, it's one of those things that we're talking about at the shop where, I get more DC than Marvel books these days. And I know you do as well. We were talking off air, you're under 5 Marvel books on a regular basis.
Right. And only 2 of them are ongoing.
Right. And I maybe have a couple more than that. And I feel as though every Marvel book I get, there's an anniversary issue every 3 months.
Don't get me started on that.
Whereas DC, a company who is built on legacies and anniversaries and these 80-year-old characters, seemingly only do it, I don't know, maybe once a year?
Yeah, and maybe, even with that,
maybe sometimes even less, you know? Right,
and even with that Nightwing 300, I don't think it was overpriced. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no.
Where it was like regular price, but it was also, it was like, say, 117 and 300, and it was $499. But you get like the Marvel books, and it's like, oh, it's really 68 and 900. Here's a $9 book. And like, ugh, anyway.
Right, and then here's issue 25 of the current numbering, and then in 3 months we get issue 800 of the legacy numbering, and then in 3 months after that, it's the 60th anniversary of the character, right?
Listen, when Spider-Man did the extra price, like the $5.99 or the $6.99 25th issue of Spider-Man, and then they figured out that 26 was a legacy for like $900, that was kind of what they did. I was like, I'm never buying Spider-Man again. Never.
Oh, well, I have to buy Amazing Spider-Man. It's my lot in life. But one of the other books, similarly my lot in life to purchase, is Daredevil, who they just had a big 60th anniversary issue with issue 8 of the current numbering.
Right, because Mark.
So it's one of those deals where it's a $7 or $8 book. You get your 20 to 22 pages of the main story, and then you get a bunch of like stories from classic creative teams or like new creative teams or whatever it is, right?
Right, maybe a reprint.
Or maybe a reprint or something, right? Like, oh, we're going to reprint the first issue of Daredevil number one in here. Or we're going to do a thing where, like, here's every cover of every issue of Daredevil ever, right?
Right.
Well, this time around, not only did they forget a page from one of the backup features, they forgot an entire backup feature altogether.
Oh, no. That's how they save money, Joe. They
just don't print
the work.
Well, that's the thing. So, save money. They did send out information to retailers, urgent misprint on all cover editions. So now they got to replace like the crazy variant covers.
Oh.
And Todd, typically like an anniversary book, like they'll usually have like what, one or two, variant covers.
Mm-hmm.
This one has 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 variant covers.
And I bet you there's more than that. Like, there's, like, shop exclusives or somehow, you know what I mean?
Right. So it's like, we've been notified of the missing pages affecting all covers of issue 8. The following UPCs have been made returnable and can be reported with this affidavit returns window. Publisher will be reissuing a reprint. We recommend that you place your new orders now as soon as possible, et cetera, et cetera. The missing 16 pages do not affect the main story.
Good, good.
Yeah. So I'll keep my misprint copy. And I'm sorry, I can't believe I sold Marvel short. It was a $10 book, Todd.
Oh, come on, it was $9.99. You know the trick where if you keep it under that point, people will think it's $9, like it's a dollar less. You know, like if you do $39.99, it's $30 in the person's mind, not $40.
It's not like they're messing up like hardcovers or omnibuses or anything else like that, are they?
This is the practice run, Joe. If we could screw this up, we could screw anything up. Congratulations.
Oh my goodness.
Oh.
Yeah, so this stinks. It's the first biggie that Marvel's had in quite some time, so... Not to say that we're not an equal opportunity podcast. There's that word again when it comes to the companies fouling things up.
Right.
Speaking of fouling things up, Todd.
Okay.
It appears as though Sony Pictures has done some reshuffling on their release schedule for the back half of 2023 into 2024. Specifically things affected... were an upcoming Karate Kid remake.
Okay.
And Kraven, The Last Hunter.
Oh, I'm Kraven his last hunt, I'll tell you.
So the original release date of this movie, Todd.
Right.
You're talking to the person who keeps track of these sort of things.
Yeah.
Was supposed to be January 23rd of 2023. Over a year ago, this movie was supposed to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Then they delayed it to October 6th of 2023. Then they delayed it to August 30th of 2024. Less than 4 months from this day, it was supposed to be coming out. Now they've bumped it back another 3.5 months to the second week of December. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, well, if they're moving it that close in December, they're probably putting it up for Oscar consideration.
Oscar the Grouch?
Well, it's going to go in a garbage can eventually, because I don't think this movie's coming out.
Right? Do you think it's going to get shelved for tax purposes? You think it's getting the old Batgirl? The Coyote Acme movie?
I will say this. So, I don't know if Sony has sunk as low as Warner Brothers Discovery when it comes to stuff like this.
Right.
To just take multiple fully formed, ready to be released movies and just throw them away and delete them off the hard drive as a tax break, right?
Right.
But if they were going to start with one,
I'll say this. I think the smart empty suits at Sony realized that Madam Web is coming to Netflix soon, and the longer people can appreciate Madam Web on Netflix, the better Craven will do. I don't know. Something like that.
I think if I'm somebody at Sony, I cut a deal and I make this the first Sony Tubi exclusive film.
Direct to Tubi.
Direct to Tubi. You get the buzz going there. You release a new trailer for Craven. And like you release it like at midnight or something on like whatever day it is, right? And you just say at the end where like you're like, oh, here's the fifth delay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that last title card comes up and says, streaming everywhere on Tubi today. And just like drop it on people as a surprise drop. People will go out of their mind. Are you telling me with the delays that this movie have and the fact that it's free on Tubi, people wouldn't go out of their minds and go watch Craven? You would get more people watching Craven that way than you would by actually releasing it in the theaters.
That's what they did with that third Cloverfield movie.
Yeah, oh, that's right. It was
They dropped it on Netflix.
It was part of the Super Bowl, like,
Super Bowl. Yeah, they were just, oh, by the way, Cloverfield Paradox. It's going to be on there at midnight tonight. And they blew up Netflix. You know what I mean?
Right.
I figure you get like the World Series of Cricket, like that, and you put it at the end of that. And then like you get your tens of fans watching the movie.
Tubi doesn't have any live streaming sports yet, do they?
Not that I know of. They should. They should have baseball is what they should.
So I don't know what streaming service connects to Sony.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously if Madam Web is on Netflix, and again, listen, I joke because I love Tubi. Tubi is going to be the one that rules all these streaming services when we're all said and done. But with Netflix now doing live sports and stuff, isn't the Tyson Paul brother thing going to be on Netflix or something, or no?
I don't know where that's going to be, but I can't wait until Tyson hands him his lunch.
Yeah. But I know Netflix is starting to get into the business of streaming live sporting events. And I know at the beginning of 2025, it's going to be the exclusive home of Monday Night Raw. That being said, whatever their first live streaming sports thing is, you get the rights to Craven, whatever your first live sport event is.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of it, you just say, hey, after this, tune in on Netflix to watch Craven.
Mm-hmm. That was the Magic the Gathering Championship. Up next, Craven the Hunter.
See, now you got me. I got to see here. Netflix.
I know Netflix is, I think, in bed with Sony because they got Morbius, I believe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of get all the non-Spider-Man movies. Does Netflix have sports?
They have. Okay, so they tested things out back in November with a formula. A all-star golf tournament back in November.
Right.
And that was the first thing that they did.
Netflix the Ocho.
Yeah. That was, like I said, that was back in November, and that was the first and only thing that they did. That was their test. Then they did a thing with tennis, maybe?
Okay.
They did a tennis thing back on March 3rd, where it was a head-to-head thing with Rafael Nadal and another guy, Carlos Alcaraz.
Sure.
Right, it was a live thing, blah, 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 so on and so forth. So I know they're looking into doing more. Again, they've already done some, so maybe like whatever their next one is, they could throw Craven on there as a bonus, you know?
Right. When they get the Cleveland Browns games, they can do it.
Okay. But. So that's all we got in the news this week. Hey, if you're in the greater northeastern Pennsylvania area and you listen to this show, this weekend is Fan Expo Philly, which replaces what was like WizardCon Philly, you know?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, Wizard World Philly, and this is a really good lineup. For this, you know, like media guests notwithstanding, but they got Andy Kubert, they got Ryan Ottley, Yannick Paquette, Tom Grummet, Rags Morales, and then you've got a ton of Ghost Machine people there. Right. Jeff Johns, Jason Fabok, Brian Hitch, Francis Manapul, Pete Tomasi, amongst others. So, like, obviously with the beginning of the Ghost Machine books that just came out this past month, the issue twos are rolling out in May. If this is the deal that Fan Expo hooked up, and I don't look that far in advance on the conventions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But if this is, like, maybe, like, the summer deal or back half of 2024 deal that they did that, like, the Ghost Machine people are going to be exclusively at the Fan Expo cons?
Right. I don't think they'll be exclusive because there's no way they're not going to do New York Comic Con.
I get you. But you know what I mean? Like, we guarantee, like, if there's a Fan Expo coming.
That, fair enough. Yes.
Yeah.
They're like, they have a contract with them.
You know, like, we got this deal. Like, for the next, like, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever Fan Expos, we got the Ghost Machine people.
Mm-hmm.
They got John's a heavy hitter, man. Like, he's up there. His name still carries a lot of weight, you know?
Yes, it does. And I mean, when you can get Chevy Chase, you're a good con.
Chevy's been making the rounds. Wasn't he recently, like, in our neck of the woods, like maybe like around Christmas time, doing like a...
Yeah, he was doing something. I know they're doing the vacation opportunity at these cons. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Everly D'Angelo is going to be there, too.
Still flying high, I'll say. She took off in the late 70s and never came back down.
No.
All right. But if you're not in the greater northeastern Pennsylvania area, of course, this weekend is one of my favorite times of the year, and that would be Free Comic Book Day. And I cannot stress enough, if you have a comic book shop in your area, or if you don't know if there's a comic book shop in your area, we always joke around and say, let our comic book shop be your comic book shop. And I'll say that again when we get to the plug section a little bit. But go to freecomicbookday.com and plunk your zip code in, or, you know, let the government track your global positioning. And, you know, if you got some time this weekend, find that comic book shop in your area for the first time, or revisit it for the first time in however many years. And yeah, they got free stuff. You know, they got the handouts for like the new big DC event that's coming up. They got the ultimate sampler for Marvel. But like all the indie books have stuff, and any comic book shop that's worth its salt is going to have sales, is going to have all sorts of other stuff that's going on. You know, don't be a freeloader and just get your free books and skedaddle. You know,
you don't need 3 for your nephews that aren't there.
Yeah. You know, go get your face painted or go get a funnel cake or whatever your local store is doing.
Exactly. Everybody has niche things that they do. Mm-hmm. I was talking with Becky at the shop, and she said CGC sent them a packet as kind of like a sponsor thing, and they gave them like some various things. But each shop that like was enrolled, whatever, got a package with a free an issue from whatever's going to be out this week, like one issue CGC'd with a special Free Comic Book Day label for this year.
Okay, I saw her post the Black Mystery package online.
Right, but she didn't say what was in it. She told me that was in it. She's like, if you want to, when you're talking about Free Comic Book Day, say this. And they have that, And it's like, you know, whatever. I'm just going to say that Gotcha Man has a free comic book day. You might get that one. This store might get the Absolute Power. This store might get whatever. She saw a lot of online people complaining about the grade of the free book they didn't know they were getting. You know what I mean? And I found that amusing. The cool thing that she said that she loved about it is it came with a little collapsible stand so you could display it. But now she uses it to do, it's her handy holder at the shop
for her
tablet device while she's doing people's subscriptions and stuff like that. So I found that amusing. And she may have put something aside for you that I'm not allowed to tell you what it is. So you'll see the next time you're in or after. I don't know if it'll be the next time you're in or after Free Comic Book Day.
Well, listen, when I go to the next time I go to the comic book shop, I'll go pick that up. And whatever it is, I'll trade it in for tokens at the local arcade so I can go play Joust or something.
There you go.
That being said, of course, you know, we'll kind of be all over the place with the plugs here because that's how we usually roll into things. Of course, the links to Free Comic Book Day and the links to Fan Expo Philly will be in the show notes, along with information about Soon To Be Named Network, which is located at soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. I'm almost certain that Soon To Be Named Network itself is dead, but at least I got the Tumblr back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's telling me my connection's not private when I try to go to that. That's a great sign.
At least your internet's working.
My internet's working. Anytime any of the shows go live, of course, you can certainly find them there. The social media for Soon To Be Named Network, STBN Network on Twitter, has a link tree for all the shows in the Soon To Be Named Network, so you can get all that information there, whether it be this show, whether it be After Dark, whether it be Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Porch Talk, Wings on Wings, We Need Wrestling, Final Wrestling Place, At Odds with Wrestling. Porch Talk should be back any day now, right? Maybe?
I was talking. He said now that the weather's changing, it should be starting again, but we'll see. We'll see.
And Young Ed, formerly of Hayabusa, keeps threatening a new show. When it comes, it comes.
Right. Yeah. Don't hold your breath.
Definitely not. And also be sure to check out some of the other stuff that some of our friends are doing in and around the internet. Head over to progressiveruin.com to check out our friend Mike Sterling's blog. 30-plus year retailer over on the West Coast. One of my favorite blogs, even before this show or any iteration of the show was a thing. HellionsTeam.com. Kevin Hellions is his musings and writings and stuff in regards to both this show and At Odds with Wrestling. Rick Williams, the Chop Shop, over at freekaratechops.storeenvy.com. He's got like all sorts of like anime looking muscle, old school figure looking things, wrestling stuff, alien looking stuff, funky stuff. I really love his stuff. Jason Sandberg's Jupiter is still available over at his Indiegogo. I think you can still get that a la carte. Just the book or all the bells and whistles from postcards to collector coins and everything else like that. As low as $13 to support independent comic book creators. Chris Runt's Battle Monsters available over at his site, fortressofcomicnews.com. Our good friend Davey of the band Cave People has his site, cavedomaincomics.com, where you could pick up his most recent offerings of both Mending and Keeper. And I already gave them a soft push, and I'll give them a little bit of a harder push here. If you do not have a good comic book store in your area, you do not have a comic book store in your area, let our store be your store. Comics on the Green, I have their information linked up there. Some of the random Silver Age issues that just dropped into the gang's lap this past weekend were first appearance of Gwen Stacy, first appearance of Mary Jane, first Crimson Dynamo, the origin of Doctor Doom, amongst many others.
I'm glad I own that already.
Yes.
Or I would be buying that one.
And I'll say this. My red letter, if you want to get classic comics, good comics, whatever, okay? I own these because there was a period of time before I had a kid, I started working backwards to try to fill in the gaps on my Amazing Spider-Man run.
Good luck.
they picked up. Well, listen, you can get a lot of the early, like the 70s issues, like non-key issues, like super cheap, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But issues 229 and 230, nothing can stop the juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest Spider-Man stories, nay, one of the greatest comic book stories of all time, and it features Madame Web.
Really? Wow.
Yes. So that was in the lot of stuff that Dave and the crew picked up this past week, new copies of. I'm sure those 229 and 230s have come in and out of the shop multiple times.
Yeah.
But it's just a really good story, and like it's relatively cheap Silver Age stuff. And it's cool looking, you know, and listen, if you still have Madame Web fever, like we all do, you know,
right. There's no cure for that. I heard.
I've been taking every pill that's not nailed down and nothing's stopping it, Todd. So you could sign up for their mail order subscription service, get books mailed to you weekly, bi-weekly or monthly. And if you do, there's a chance that you get a sketch on the package from our good friend, Becky, who I'm going to turn things over to now. For my walk down Lois Lane.
Welcome back to my walk down Lois Lane. Last week we talked about issue 34. Lois married a reformed Lex Luthor. They had a son named Larry, who decided he's going to continue the family tradition of slapping around Superman, accidentally killing his father in the process, and somehow blaming Superman for it. This week is issue 46 from 1964. The writers decided to revisit this imaginary story 2 years later, so let's dive in. It's the future, and Larry has become a space pirate and owns a rocket with skull and crossbones on it because he is very, very edgy. Superman is searching through space trying to find Larry, and Lois has joined a ship full of aliens trying to get to him first because Superman told her he's going to throw Larry in a deep dark hole if he gets a hold of him. While doing space pirate stuff, Larry comes across his mother, and she lays on the guilt by telling him he's broken her heart, his dad was a good man, he should just go ahead and kill her. You know, typical mother guilt. Superman shows up, and while fighting him with a new helmet he's created, Larry loses all of his hair and now looks exactly like his father. This is also somehow Superman's fault, and Larry escapes, now more determined to kill him. Lois goes back to Earth and finds Superman, Lana, and their teenage daughter, Joan. Larry sends them a threat, saying Superman will pay for his shiny new head, and Joan tells him she thinks Larry's kind of cute. Joan flies out into space and finds Larry and flirts with him. She has a magic lipstick used to manipulate anyone she kisses, but it doesn't work on him because that's not really him. That's one of his many bold clones. Some of Larry's men try to attack Joan, but he points out using her as an alive ransom is better than her dead and tells him to scram while he shows Joan what a cool and totally not lame pirate king he is. His pirate crew betray him, shocking, and leave him unconscious on a radiated planet. Lois tries to rescue him and ends up becoming sick from the radiation and passes out. Larry wakes up because he takes anti-radiation pills like their vitamins and sees his mother is dying. He apologizes to her, says he knows he's a disgrace to the family name, and Lois's life flashes before her eyes. She has a what-if dream of marrying Superman and having a son that does Nobel Prize work instead of space pirating. Larry carries Lois back to her ship and tries to save her. Meanwhile, the pirates have decided that Larry's plan of boiling the Earth because Superman made him bald is still a good idea, an attack with Joan still held hostage. Larry catches up to them and uses the same technology that reformed his father to stop them and saves the Earth. Once the pirates and Larry's ship touch down, Joan runs up to him and sees that his hair has grown back. Turns out he used good guy chemicals on himself before he used them on the pirates and transformed into a nice guy with a head full of hair. Joan confesses that she loves him. He tells her he loves her too, and the issue ends with Larry and Joan marrying and flying across the universe to fight crime. So you see what I mean when I say this is a trip? This story ended up being printed in the Crisis on Infinite Earths compendium and now has been retconned as an Earth 34 story. There are two more comics where Lois and Lex are married, Superman Family 172 from 1975 and 1982's Superman Annual No. 1. I hope you've enjoyed these what-if marriage stories, and I will see you next week for some more Lois Lane.
Now, in talking to Becky, and again, I don't want to spoil too much of what we've been discussing in regards to the future of my walk down Lois Lane.
Right.
I'll say enjoy these 60s fun time goofing around issues while you can, right?
Right, right, yep.
Whether it be them like folding these weird stories into actual like Earth 3 continuity or stuff like that.
Right.
Once we hit the 70s, the book takes a dramatic turn.
Yes, it does. And you'll pine for those classic days when a man was embarrassed to have no hair, Joe. Like, my God, like, I listened to her talk, and it's like, oh, like, because original Lex was mad that he lost his hair because of Superman, and now Larry Luthor was blaming, you know, Superman because he lost his hair, and he wasn't good again till he had his long flowing mane again. And I'm like, man, you bald people, like, you were a pariah. In the, you know, if you were a man and didn't have hair back then.
It was a different time. You can't judge, like I always say. And that was the thing. Like, I'm trying to think in popular culture, like, I guess even Mr. T to an extent, like having a mohawk, right? And he was a movie star and a TV star and everything else like this. Telly Savalas, maybe, as a bald man who was seen as like a leading man type?
There was only one other guy that I could remember, and that was Yul Brynner.
Right.
And he was doing the was it The King and I? And he shaved his head for that or whatever. And then he I don't know if he lost his hair, he kept it. But he was pretty much bald for the rest of his career that I remember. And then he did those Don't Smoke ads. But I just think it's like Telly Savalas, him, and I wouldn't count Mr. T. I wouldn't count Mr. T because he had the mohawk.
Right. So, but what I'm saying is like those were two outliers.
Right.
Of bald men who were looked at as like leading men in Hollywood.
Yep.
I'm going to guess that the next one would have been Bruce Willis.
Yeah, because he lost his hair early.
He was balding during, like, the first two Die Hard movies, and then by the third one in Pulp Fiction and everything else like that, he was bald.
Yeah, I would really like to watch, you know, the evolution of bald actors, like, where it really turned, you know?
We'll put it on the wheel for next year. How about that?
Right, bald actor movies.
Yes. All right. So thank you again, Becky, of course, for your continued contributions to the show. They're greatly appreciated, and we enjoy listening to them. Hopefully everyone else does as well. Let's get into what we've read from this past week. And Todd, where would you like to begin?
I think I'll start with the one book that we read, which is Pine and Merrimack, number 4, written by Kyle Starks, illustrated by Fran Gallan. Linnea and Parker have sussed out the cult, and they witnessed a sacrifice kind of a deal, and they ended up making a diversion, and now they're kind of on their way out with some really great like moments with that, with the guards who are completely inept, and you know, and Parker has to do his fighter routine to kind of get them out. And as they're escaping, they run into another cult, if you will, but it's a lesser cult having a party.
Well, so they teased it last issue that the way that they were able to get in on one of her cases initially was that the people having the furry party, the last guy in forgot to close the door.
Right. And they're on their way out, and they get recognized by one of the people because they had done a case for them, and now maybe the bad guys, you know, have who they are because they talk to them and they kind of have a reference. But they go and they talk to their what would you say, Army Navy guy, to try and get some
the guy who runs like the Army surplus store, let's say.
Right, the surplus store, and they're going to get weapons off them. I like how that situation doesn't go cliche, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. I like the bit that Kyle Starks does there. Then they end up doing like some flashbacks about like a gift that Parker gave to Linnea, which I think is going to – the reason it's in there is going to come back because of it. And then they decide they're going to kind of split up. Parker's going to go get help, and Linnea's going to kind of like break into the cult thing again, and maybe things don't quite go the way they planned. I really like this issue, but I will say I honestly think you could, as much as I loved it, you probably could have condensed issue 3 and 4 and made it one story, because I kind of felt that there was a lot going on that was like, I was like, okay, I get the scenes, not a lot is happening here, and I think it could have been a 4-issue mini. And then that being said, the ending was completely spoiled for me online, but anyway.
Oh, okay. So we're not going to spoil the ending here, but Kyle did put stuff out like early Tuesday.
Yep, and that's where it was, you know?
So he had said, be very careful because there's spoilers out there. And I'm like, ah, say no more, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like this issue a lot. I get where you're coming from, that maybe some things could have been condensed. But I like that we got a little bit more backstory of the Army-Navy guy.
Mm-hmm.
The surplus guy. Right. I like that, you know, obviously they're trying to figure, okay, we've been, like, we've been found out. They know that we're here. They know who we are. Where could we hide in this little small town? But, like, not, we can't leave town. Like, we've picked up this mission. We're going to finish this mission. We can't mm-hmm. leave town. We can't go here. We can't go there. We can't go to our place because that's where they're going to be looking for us. And they go to the homeless shelter.
Right.
And then it's at the homeless shelter. They run into a couple, 2-3 people that kind of they ruined their lives through no fault of their own, just doing their regular PI work. But I think that's going to be a plot thread that comes back. You know what I mean?
Definitely that angry Karen character.
Yeah, we got some of those characters introduced in issues 1 and 2. We get them come back around here in issue 4. And again, the way that Kyle tells these stories, these things all do interweave and everything else like that. Mm-hmm. I will say this, and this is just my purely speculation, as you mentioned, I'm not going to say that the end of issue 4 is a fake out by any stretch of the imagination, but I'll just say it's not what I'm going to hope that it's not what it appears to be.
I definitely think what the cult's doing could rectify things.
Okay.
That's my take on it. But anyway, like I said, I really enjoy it. And Fran's art is amazing. I love, like, with Linnea, like, when she's freaking out because, you know, obviously they've established, you know, we're 4 issues in, that nobody likes murder, okay? Like, we can all agree on that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say people don't like murder. But she has, like, she has anxiety about it. And she's pinching herself the whole way through the issue because that was her way to get over things. And then, like, the wide-eyed look while Parker's ushering her out, like, even under the mask, Fran is, like, conveying shock on yes. her face. You know what I mean? And it's so well. And there's, like, little bits where somebody touches something and it falls apart and it just says the slightest of touch. It's an actual word that says it, but the art conveys it too. I'm like, this is all really good. Like I said, even masked people are conveying emotion, and that's a rarity in art. You know what I mean?
Right. And the last thing that I'll mention here is, and typically, I have no one to blame but myself for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not been picking up or looking to see what any of the variant covers were for this.
Right.
But issue 4 has a variant cover by Chris Schweizer.
Right.
And it's awesome.
Well, Chris does awesome work. But
and I'm sad that I didn't know it existed, because obviously if I did, I would have chose that over the other cover. And now it's going to be a situation where I'm going to have to get this cover as well. Very rarely do I double dip on stuff, but this is such a fun cover. I really want it.
Right, right.
But like I said, that's on me. That's my laziness. I should have looked. I've learned my lesson.
You have to be more diligent when it comes to ordering and buying your comics like me, Joe.
That's right. I should take a page out of your book.
Right.
So that's what we read from this past week. It was a light week. This upcoming week's kind of a light week too, kind of, sort of, I guess. Every Tuesday around noon, we put up the pull post over at longboxheroes.com, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, However it is, you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out this week. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd is currently in the lead over me with one correct guess.
Right.
And again, obviously your list is a little bit bigger than mine. You go first anyway, so none of what I'm saying matters, right?
Right, like most of the show. But yeah. I'm looking over your list, and I'm just taking a wild swing at this one because there's two that I think. But is the book you're looking forward to most Deadpool and Wolverine World War III number one?
It is, actually. It's
Joe Kelly. I looked that up today.
Yeah, it's Joe Kelly.
You're a big Joe Kelly fan, so.
Yeah, he's, you know what? Some would say he's Deadpool's actual father. How do you like that?
Well, he's definitely a scripter. Not the scripter, but one of.
I would give him a little bit more. Now, your list is a little bit more tough, because I'm gonna fish some things here. It's definitely not the Nightwing annual.
Right, because Tom Taylor didn't write the Nightwing annual.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not buying that.
I think it's not the Zorro issue 4.
I'm being quiet.
Okay. I'm going to guess the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Blood Brothers Mother number 1.
It is Blood Brothers Mother number 1. Tough to say real fast.
Yes.
Do you know what it's about? Anything about it?
All I know is it's by the creative team that brung you 100 Bullets, and it's a Western.
Yeah, it's all I needed to hear, Joe.
Yeah.
And I grabbed it. To be honest, that jumped to the top of the list. If it wasn't that, I'm just shooting because I don't know. It might have been Space Ghost or, like you said, there's like Get Furious, Garth Ennis, too. There's a lot of fun books this week, so.
Right.
I'm going with that
one. And that's, so the Blood Brothers Mother, for some reason, I thought that was later.
So did I. I was confused on the order of books coming out, but it's not later. And the other problem I have with it, because I know about it, is that it's it's 48 pages, so I'm fine with that. It's $8.99, and it's a magazine cardstock, bound book. It's square bound.
Okay.
And it's not oversized. I'll say it'll fit in a magazine bag. You know what I mean? It's a black label size. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
But the covers are I was at the shop and saw the covers. They're gorgeous, Joe.
Hmm. Perfect. I'm excited to and it's just a one shot, right? It's not like an ongoing or anything.
No, I think it's a mini.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I'll look that up really quick. See, I don't know. I'm 99% sure that it's ongoing, not an ongoing, a mini, sorry.
All right. I'll have to deal with that later. Okay. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of Long Box Heroes After Dark, and of course, the current ongoing reread of Gail Simone's Secret Six. In Todd and Joe Have Issues, and we're here, the moment we've all been finally waiting for. It's all built up to this. Issue 1, Volume 3, released in what would have been September of 2008. Mm-hmm. And, obviously on a different iteration of this very show here, this was a book that we were on from almost the very beginning, if not from the beginning.
Right.
And for the 3 years running that this book was coming out, this was like our favorite book of the year.
Yep. I don't know how hard I pushed this ongoing on people, and people were slowly coming around,
Right. Obviously it's the same creative team that we had on the previous, Birds of Prey stuff, Gail Simone on writing and Nicola Scott on art. The cover looks so cool. The use of colors, the little swirl of smoke coming out of Deadshot's gun. Like, I would love a clean version of that, you know? Mm-hmm. Right. And, like, you could barely tell because of the smoke and the logo and everything else like that. You have the two shadowed people in the background to fill out the full six, you know?
Yes, yes, because there's only four on the cover.
Right, and these are the four that we've met from the very, very, very beginning, you know, going all the way back to Villains United. So, you know, obviously this is kind of telling us, you know, subliminally that, you know, through the run, these are your four, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, sort of, right? But we get a lot of things introduced into this. That the six are given a mission that they have to break a villainess tarantula out of Alcatraz. And it's always interesting when, like, the real DC universe and the real world kind of meld together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That they have, like, Alcatraz exists in a world where Arkham Asylum exists, you know?
Right.
And, like, you have your DC-centric specific cities in generic, like, Gotham City really could be anywhere, right? But mm-hmm. they have to get this person from Gotham City or Alcatraz to San Francisco. And as it turns out, by them, the six, taking this mission, there is a $10 million per person bounty on each of their heads.
Right.
Put on their head by a brand new villain who we're introduced to in this. And again, I wouldn't call it a first appearance, but I guess it would be a first appearance, and that right. would be Junior.
Right. And I'll say, I love the way, because Huntress tips off Catman, because they kind of met each other in the Birds of Prey. And I love when she says how bad it is. He's like, oh, we can handle it. He's like, you don't understand. It's $10 million a piece. And the line she uses, it's a barbecue, and you guys are the meat. I'm like, I'm stealing that joke. That's fantastic. That's not the only bit of dialogue that I love. Later on, when I'll just point out one thing that made me laugh harder than I've laughed in a long, long time. And Junior, like, I know now who Junior is because we've read the thing. I'm not going to say. I'm not going to, like, say, oh, that's Vandal Savage's daughter or anything. I'm just going to say, like, to me, it should have been more obvious, like, rereading it now. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, maybe they've set up some hints, but we'll see.
Yes. So, you know, obviously that's the main crux of where we're starting with the characters, of course. But from, you know, we also get some character bits in between the Birds of Prey thing, and it actually happens in an issue of Birds of Prey, and it wasn't written by Gail Simone, so that's why we didn't read it. Right. There was a lot of back and forth behind the scenes of whether or not we should read it or not, you know?
Right, and I thought about it. I was wondering, like, I always wondered if, I want to speculate, maybe because maybe she does listen occasionally, is, like, if Gail didn't want to write that issue. Do you know what I mean? Because it was killing a woman for, you know, whatever, like she did the women in refrigerators, but it was more not because of that, it was because of a stupid storyline of Countdown to, what was it, Final Countdown, whatever it was. It was that thing where they were killing off all the new gods, and Knockout was one of the new gods, and I just thought it was so stupid. But I will say, Gail will make chicken salad out of, you know what, with that storyline as we go on through this series.
I don't know. I heard a Talking Dead commentator say it the other way around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to discuss that with you. I don't know. Yeah. But
he's not very bright, but anyway. Mm-hmm. but yeah, so obviously Scandal is dealing with the loss, the death of Knockout. The rest of the boys' crew maybe picks the wrong way to go about it. But right. it definitely works because it kind of helps snap Scandal out of the funk, the drunken funk that she's in, and to kind of get focused on the mission. You know, we have the, I guess, buddy, I don't want to say buddy cop, but the buddy relationship that's developing between Catman And Deadshot, and you know, we saw a little bit more in Birds of Prey than we did in the previous issues, and we get to see it a little bit more here, where Deadshot is getting to be a little bit more loose, a little bit more like, I don't want to say the comic relief of the team, but he'll definitely like come up with a one-liner, or like he definitely lives to needle and give Catman a hard time.
Yes, and it's very clever. It's not just stupid shtick.
Yes.
Because like, the whole gist of them is like Catman trying to tell Deadshot, maybe I should go straight and maybe we should go straight. And he's like, and he's trying to explain it, and he's talking about, which I find interesting, like good, bad, heaven and hell, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
So I was like, oh, okay. And then through a series of things, there's a stick up in the convenience store. Well, and they
not
stop.
To interrupt, the way that it goes is they go to the convenience store because for the surprise party that they're throwing for Scandal, they needed to get ice cream.
Right.
And they're going through the ice cream thing and having a very casual conversation about like good and evil while a bunch of Nazi skinheads are holding up the place. And they're just like unfazed by it. And then the Nazi skinheads are like, hey, guys, what's the thing here? And they're like, all right, well, I guess we have to deal with this now. And Deadshot gives them lessons on how you're properly supposed to be, how you're properly supposed to do a stick up. And then shames Catman and says, well, you know, if you really were on this path to redemption of being a good guy, you just left two defenseless people in there with a bunch of Nazi scumbags.
Right, and a couple of minorities who are witnesses to their crime.
Yeah.
And obviously, and then when it's over and, like, Catman hands them their lunch viciously, recapping the thing, well, maybe I should become a hero, and he's like, after he beats the livid daylights out of him, yep, Justice League should be calling any day now, General Glory. Gale dropping a General Glory reference? Big props, right? And then he's like, you know what I thought was particularly noble and heroic and all Teen Titan-y? The bit where you were choking that one skidhead with the whole huge thing of beef jerky. Surprised he didn't ask for an autograph right there. And he's like, let up. And he goes, and when you broke all those guys with your teeth with your foot, I think I've seen Captain Marvel do that once for charity, as I recall. Joe, I've read this years ago, read it a couple times. The whole Captain Marvel kick somebody's teeth in for charity is one of the greatest lines I've read to just stick it to somebody in a comic. Absolutely love it. But, Joe, is there somebody new in the background?
So there is. So we are introduced to the fifth member of the Secret Six. And, listen, I don't want to give too much away in regards to this, but it's Bane.
Yeah. And I love the way Gale introduces him as he's already a member of the team. There's no explanation why he's there, how he's recruited, and it makes me want to know more without going, this is stupid. Do you know what I mean? Like, I love it. It's like, tell me how Bane got wrapped up in all of this.
And it's, you know, we do get there. We do get that story. But it's crazy to think at this point in 2008 that Bane is more or less a forgotten character in the world of not only the greater DC universe, but also in Batman in general.
Right. To think about they're using Bane in Secret Six. You know,
like we have been taught that if you are in Secret Six, you are a forgotten character.
Right. Maybe, like, we always use Deadshot as the one. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of had some street cred before that. But, like, I was actually shocked to see Deadshot or Bane show up as the villain in this.
As part of the Secret Six.
Right. And we get a mention that along the trip that we're going to meet the sixth member who we don't know who it is yet, you know?
Right. We don't know. And if I remember correctly, we don't know for some time.
Right. I don't know. It's probably in the storyline because they meet them along the way, right?
Okay, so it's within, like, if we're collecting this, and I do have it listed here of just, like, what the current hardcover collections are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's within the first trade, we do find out who it is in the first six issues.
Right.
But I don't, well, like, obviously we don't find out here. I don't think we find it out until, like, maybe almost, like, the end, like, end of issue four, beginning of issue five, maybe?
Right.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I'll say, Nicola Scott's art is absolutely gorgeous, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. The bit with like the party that they throw for Scandal, and they bring in the woman who looks like Knockout. The bit where she does just enough to make a difference when we see them back to back in the panels, kind of a deal. And one has green eyes and one has blue eyes. And you're like, okay, one's Knockout, one's this dancer. And I'm like, this is absolutely gorgeous. And I'm wondering if this character will be throwaway or not, but we'll see.
So if I remember correctly, they are. It's just like a one-time shot for this person. But that being said, outside of, you know, obviously there's ties to the greater DC universe. And whether it be 2008 or 2024, if you can get a little bit of that Batman bump, take mm-hmm. it. But outside of like Huntress being the tie to the Birds of Prey stuff and Batman showing up on the last page, this is all more or less self-contained.
Yep.
You know, obviously, if you read Batman, you know who Bane is, but I would certainly say the Bane that you knew from Batman is not the Bane that's in this.
I don't know. I know what you're saying. It is that Bane, but he's different.
Yeah.
I don't remember, because that's one of the things, the Bane I remember the least about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's not as ragey, maybe. I don't know. I'm actually looking forward to remembering along the way, you know?
So I think a lot of where people fall off, and I far be it from me to be a Bane defender by any stretch of the imagination,
mm-hmm.
but I think in this Gail Simone Secret Six run, you'll definitely be a Bane understander.
Right. I say this about Bane. No, like, we joke around, like, you know, and we've had a lot of fun on this show about Nightfall, you know, as we always say. But Bane's origin is the second best origin of a villain in that era. For me, it'll always be Doomsday.
Yep.
Like Doomsday with the whole, you know, he evolves to adapt to whatever is thrown at him. But I always, like, I read that Vengeance of Bane one shot. I had that one shot back in the day. When they do his origin where he's a guy who's born in prison, like a baby who's born in prison, and the mother's hoping that the baby's a girl, because if the baby's a girl, it gets out. If it's a boy, it takes over the father, whatever, like that. It gets the prison sentence for life. And I was like, that's a horrible origin in a good way. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, this is really good. And he
like, that's how you make a villain.
Yeah. He grows up in the prison and, you know, he's trained because he has to survive. And then in the end, he does the experiment to get out, and he breaks loose, and then like they're like, oh, nobody's gonna get off this island. There's all sharks out there, and he jumps off the island and kills sharks with his bare hands to get away. I'm like, this is how you tell an origin story, my man. So I will never bag on Bane being a great character. I just thought he ushered in a bad character later on, you know?
And that's the thing. That's no fault of his own. We're talking mm-hmm. about him as though he's a living, breathing person.
Right, this is a documentary, by the way.
You have that origin. You have Nightfall. And again, I don't bag on Nightfall. I bag on the stuff that comes after Nightfall.
Right.
But Nightfall essentially is, Bane's plan is, I'm going to release every villain from Arkham Asylum. And after Batman has put them all back in,
and he's tuckered out,
and he needs a nap after he's playing his mandolin,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go and I'm going to break his back. And then I'll be the new Batman. Right?
That is a brilliant strategy to take out Batman. And okay. I'm surprised villains don't do it every month.
So again, he's set up as a credible threat and as a brilliant strategist. There you go. And then after this story, he's never that again. For the next 15 years, he is used as muscle. He is used as a background character. He is used as a punchline after this.
Sometimes people
until Secret Six.
Right. Sometimes people only have one plan in them, Joe.
I don't know, man. There's so many people. It's like Joker's got one plan.
It's kill Batman.
Well, Joker's plan has been like, Joker gas, and I'm going to make everyone a Joker like me. Then am I special anymore? Then there's all Joker. Anyway. But what I'm saying is this Secret Six is Bane's redemption arc.
It's a Catman glow up 2.0.
There you go. Perfect. And not any discrediting to Villains United, Villains United one shot, Birds of Prey, all the other stuff that we read from this. The Secret Six miniseries, okay? This is what I've been waiting for.
This is to me, the best of the best.
These 36 issues, I say 38 because you get the Suicide Squad Blackest Night thing and the Doom Patrol crossover.
Right.
So 38. These 38 issues all together is one of my favorite runs of comic books of all time.
It is sneaky good.
Yes.
Like, that's the best way to describe it. Because, like, you know, everybody talks about their Sandmans. They talk about their Watchmans. But you don't. And I think the part that has hurt Secret Six is those trades were very, like, went out of print and were very hard to find. Like, I would be able to, if these books were still in print, I would be able to fawn this off on people. And people would read this and be like, give me the second trade. You know what I mean? Yep. But I'm not handing out my issues. You know what I mean? Because that's all I can get. Soon to be, you know, by the Omnibus, you know.
Again, Omnibus, we talked about it. Omnibus in stores second week of July, or January, or June. I'll get there eventually. It's a J month. Second week of June is when it will be in stores.
Right. And then, like, that's the first half, I guess, so.
Yeah. I can't wait to read the rest of this.
I'm with you. I'm along for the ride, Joe.
This is definitely one of those ones where, like, a lot of times where we had been doing the Todd and Joy of issues, you're like, yeah, I read ahead seven issues in Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously things have been busy and time and everything else like that. But after I read issue one for this week, I was like, I can read, like, the rest of this right now, right? I got time.
Right, and then when you're on issue next
five and just wrap up this story arc and revisit it again, just kind of touch base and make notes for myself when we do it over the next couple weeks, and you know, things just get hectic and busy and everything else like that, and that doesn't happen. But
like you said, now you know how I feel when I was doing Sandman.
Yes. So that is it for this week, right? Plugs, real plugs. We gave, like, everybody else's plugs. Now we'll do our plugs. Shirts and pins and stickers. Shoot me an email. I'll sell you some. I'll give you some. I'll do something with them, right?
Right.
Make any and all of your eBay purchases through our eBay affiliate link. This page contains affiliate links for eBay. We may receive a small commission on purchases that you make. You could use the affiliate link anytime that you want to buy anything from eBay and support us at the same time.
Yeah.
But the bestest and my favorite way to support us is to sign up for our Patreon. Patreon.com/longboxheroes for as little as $1 a month. You're going to get two bonus shows from Todd and myself. You're going to get Previewing the Past, where we look at 30 years ago, this month's previews catalog. We already have the full catalog up for May 1994, which we'll be recording this weekend. And for the non-paid folks, we got a tease of some of the stuff that's in there. Mm-hmm. I always like, you know, handpicking the few pages that we put out there as the tease, just to tickle you a little bit, to come on in, right?
See what we're
talking about. Mm-hmm. And we also got Comic Book Oddities, where we're looking at some of the lesser known, maybe purposely forgotten, canceled pilots, TV movies, pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe comic book stuff. We're hot off the heels of Superman 3, where I think we redeem Superman 3.
Superman redeemed.
Yes, just like Bane is redeemed in Secret Six, Superman 3 is redeemed by us in the Patreon, maybe. So $5 a month is going to get you those two bonus shows 2 weeks before everyone else. It's also going to get you After Dark 2 days before everyone else, so you can listen to these shows in the correct listening order. no matter what level you are on the Patreon, you're going to get those full scans of those catalogs for the previews that we talk about. High quality, expertly done scans going all the way back to 1990. We've been doing previewing the past for a very long time.
Oh my God.
And I love doing it.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Joe? I think they're both good, but I'm coming around on the oddities more.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I have fun on both, but man, oh man, when you get a good oddities movie, and by good, I mean bad. Oh my God.
You know, while we're talking, there was one that Todd mentioned off mic.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just see if I could find it somewhere else.
Right. Cause it's not on Tubi, which shocked
the shockingly heck out of us. Not on Tubi.
Mm-hmm, till all are one.
I can get it off one of my, opportunity sites.
There you go. You mean you could buy the DVD is what you're saying.
We'll oh together. Yes,
that gotcha was, gotcha. Add it to the wheel.
Yep, it'll be added to the wheel, and we'll discuss it when we do previewing the past, maybe this week, maybe.
Fair enough. Yep.
All right, so now that's it, that's the show wrapped up, right?
That's everything, I believe. I don't think we have anything else to talk about.
No, nothing at all. 2 weeks we'll be talking about Doctor Who, and I think that's only the real genre-y thing until June when we get that new Star Wars show, and then Boys Season 2.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the Star Wars show is about, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, neither do I. I like Star Wars, though. I'll watch a Star Wars, right?
Right.
All right, well, everyone, thank you very much for listening. This was episode 708 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.
The Rob is a long box hero. He gives us five stars.